The Warriors Podcast, conversations with folks from in and around the organization, picking back up here at Chase Center with the general manager of Chase Center, Kim Stone, who joined the Warriors from the Miami Heat organization and the American Airlines Arena. And, you know, here we wanted to build a special gathering place for folks in the Bay Area. And in addition to all of the Warriors games that we've had here, we've had world-class entertainment and just a whirlwind several months. And we're just getting started. What's to come here at Chase Center, and what have you enjoyed about the first several months of operation?
Well, first, thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here in the Bay Area and with the Warriors organization. And you said it well. We started off 4 months of operating. We've had 61 events, including 23 Warriors games. So we have actually done more concerts than we have games at this point. We've welcomed the likes of Metallica, as most fans probably know. That's how we opened the building, with an amazing concert. We also have had Elton John, we've had Janet Jackson, you name it, we did Dead & Co. for New Year's Eve. That was really special because it was like the modern version of the Grateful Dead, and to see them playing in a San Francisco arena was really, really special. So we've had just a whirlwind 4 months. It's hard, it feels like it's been 4 years, but that's all for good things. We've almost welcomed 1 million fans into the doors here at Chase Center in 4 months, so it's been a sprint. And we're just starting a marathon, so to speak. So coming up, you mentioned this, we've got Joe Coy, 2 sold-out shows. He's coming in February. We've also got Post Malone, Celine Dion, 2 Eagles shows. One has sold out, so hurry up and get your tickets for the second one. That's a classic band coming through. That's going to be in April. So we're excited about what we have coming through the first half of 2020.
Coming to the Bay Area from Miami and working at an arena that's another iconic downtown arena on the waterfront, and it's beautiful. But one thing I really enjoy is walking out on the patio when the Warriors are playing the Heat, and walking out and seeing the Bay. That's the, you know, Bay in Miami. But here we are seeing early signs of life of success. But from what you knew was working in Miami to what you're seeing here at Chase Center, what are some of the early encouraging positive signs?
Yeah, great question. So I did have the honor 23 years ago of opening American Airlines Arena in Miami for the Miami Heat, and the Heat went through the same transformation we're going through here, where we went from being a team at the time to then a team that was becoming a sports entertainment company. That is exactly what the Warriors are going through, plus more, plus some additional opportunities with the development around us. But I would say, in terms of things that I've seen that are real positive signs, A, the building is thriving. B, it's really interesting. Mission Bay is similar to downtown Miami. When American Airlines Arena came into downtown Miami, it was a sleepy 9-to-5 downtown. It's now a thriving international city. And I wouldn't say that American Airlines Arena sparked all of that, but I would say it was definitely a contributing factor that was part of that. And you see the same thing happening here in Mission Bay, the number of restaurants that are opening. I happen to live 4 blocks away, so I've seen in 8 months this incredible growth that's happening. And it's being done in a very curated, careful manner with the neighborhood. The residents mean a lot to us. They were very important to us building this building. So the great relationship with the residents and the agencies that are in Mission Bay, as we're sort of growing this together, is a positive sign. And then I would say the other very interesting thing is this building, Chase Center, as you referenced American Airlines, it's so interesting because there is a park that will be between us and the water, and it's the same thing in Miami. And so just all of these amenities that we have here at Chase Center is just ripe for making this a destination in San Francisco, which is the ultimate goal. What's different here versus American Airlines is we've got 29 retail restaurants. We're going to have Uber office towers opening in the summer. So we're really a location and destination in downtown. So that's what I'm most excited about. And we already have several of our retail restaurants have opened. Chase, Bank, Beta, our Warrior Shop is open. Dumpling Time is going to be opening in the next several weeks. I can't wait. I have to get bigger pants already because I'm going to be eating there every day for lunch. So it's amazing what's coming, and it's wonderful to be a part of it. And all signs are positive for what we're going to achieve, the dream and the vision that was 7 years in the making, and no doubt exceed it.
You talk about the dumplings. I mean, I'm bracing myself for Nick's Nacheria. That's going to be, so Thrive City, the plaza that's outside, and what it represents to the community as a gathering place and how it's growing. What's the future for this?
Great question. We want people to wake up in San Francisco and say, hey, I wonder what's going on at Thrive City. So we sit on 11 acres and we want to program this. We had holiday lights where we had a light show that was using the arena as the backdrop, and it was beautiful. We had the largest Christmas tree, and we had just wonderful festive lights everywhere. So that will be an annual thing. And then we also are looking ahead to like a movie series that we want to do. We are already doing our farmer's market on Sunday mornings. If you haven't been by, please come by and check it out. It's great produce, and it's growing organically. That's what I love. Just a quick random story. I was at a doctor's appointment. I'm new to the city. I just randomly picked a doctor. I went to the appointment. He said he lived in Mission Bay, and he told me that he had been to the farmer's market. So I was thrilled. I was like, okay, we're really making an impact here. Farmer's market, movies, theater, we are already showing our away games. We don't broadcast this a lot, but you can, if you're in Mission Bay and you want to come by, you can watch our away games on our big screen out in the front. We are the only outdoor LED in San Francisco, so we want to make this part of we want to leverage that for the good of the community and entertain the community. So you can come by, and there's a closed caption text on it, so you can follow it. So that's already happening. So we plan to leverage all of those amenities to drive people here. We want this to be a destination. To use Peter Guber, one of our owners, to steal one of his mottos, he says, we want to be a campfire. We want to be the cozy place where people gather around and tell stories and bring their friends.
You know, part of telling stories is doing it through all forms of entertainment, including music. And, you know, one of the things about Chase Center that's different and modern and really cool that's helping artists bring great shows to their fans and their followers is a rigging system that's inside Chase Center. And how has it been a benefit, and what is it exactly that's such a critical advantage here?
Great question. So if you ever come to a show, you probably don't do this, but look up into the roof and you're going to see all of the lighting, sound, and production elements, what we call flying from the steel, which means you're going to see these chains that they're hanging from and suspended from. What makes Chase Center special, and this is really the cat's meow in terms of the industry, is we have a mesh tension grid underneath the steel. So it's like, imagine it's like having a fence around your big beams of steel. What that allows shows to do is to rig directly above where they need these elements to sit. So for example, if a speaker cluster needs to sit 10 feet off the stage left, they can literally walk 10 feet stage left, drop what we call a dead hang down, and that speaker cluster is going to hang there instead of having to do some funky math and suspend from a couple of different points. That's a little bit of techie talk, but what it means is things get rigged, shows get rigged and put in faster in our building than pretty much anywhere else. The other thing it does is it provides safety for the riggers. So they're usually, like at American Airlines Arena, they would balance on those steel beams and they'd have to be on a fall arrest system because they could easily fall off the beams, which is I could not do their jobs. The mesh system, they can walk on it and they're still secured in, but the safety is incredible. So the riggers, they're faster. The show comes in and out faster. We load in and out faster. That's very important on these tours, as they need to get to the next destination quickly and they need to get to us and set up quickly. And the other thing we have that is the cat's meow is we have our freight elevator goes all the way to the catwalk, and that means that these big, large pieces of equipment can get loaded on the freight elevator, go all the way up to the catwalk, and then they literally roll them out on the catwalk, and then they hang them from those. So that speaker cluster would go up the freight elevator onto the catwalk, be unboxed, and then do a dead hang down to their spot. At American Airlines Arena, the elevator only went up to the 8th floor. The roof rigging is on the 9th floor, so they would have to schlep this equipment out there, which means you need more labor and it takes longer. So from a production perspective and a tour perspective, it's really an asset for tours.
You know, and these shows are becoming so much more interactive, just as our basketball games and the presentation on the, you know, Jumbotron, and also the way that the stats are presented. But I mean, the tours specifically, and I think just a couple I've seen in the past couple of years, Travis Scott's Astro World tour was sort of a bit of an amusement park inside the arena. This would help. And Lorde did a tour with Run the Jewels where there was boxes like shipping crates that were clear hanging in suspension. And it's really inventive visual art going with the music that these artists bring. So that's cool that that's part of what we're doing here at Chase Center. And As we were talking with Kim Stone, the general manager of Chase Center, we want to bring in what we do on this show, and that's the This Is Your Life portion of our podcast. And for you, it's an upbringing in North Carolina, and I'm looking around your office because we're taping this in your office, and I'm looking for an AP style book because at the University of North Carolina, you're a Tar Heel, you're in the J School, and it kind of started a foundation for your career, first in communications and then here with what you're doing in operations. But how has your education, that journalism background, and we mentioned the AP style book, the Associated Press style book, it's sort of like the Strunk and White, or you know, the way to communicate effectively in a written form. And I mean, you know, I loved hearing that when I heard that story that you, when inducted into the North Carolina PR Hall of Fame, brought that style book and said, this is part of my career. But that background and the principles therein and where your career has gone. Let's start in North Carolina, upbringing and being a Tar Heel.
Sure. Great upbringing in Hendersonville, North Carolina. It's below Asheville. Okay. And Asheville, when I was growing up, it wasn't the cool, funky place that it is these days. But it was a great place to grow up. And then I was fortunate. I graduated from Carolina, and I went to UNC Wilmington as a walk-on to play basketball. I was a very big sports fan. In high school, we won our state championship in volleyball, and we were very competitive in basketball, but I was never good enough, right? I was always, quote, the defensive specialist on a very good team. But team sports, it taught me a lot about life skills. Anyway, so I went to UNC Wilmington as a walk-on, but I had reconstructive knee surgery in the spring because in our regional game, I had torn my ACL. So I went my freshman year, and just for other reasons, didn't really like UNC Wilmington. My dad had remarried at that time and was moving out to the Bay Area with my younger brother and sister because his new wife was from the Bay Area. So I actually dropped out of school at UNC Wilmington. My older sister was at Carolina. So when I dropped out, I applied to Carolina, but I helped my dad move, drive across country to move to and Dublin, of all places, in the East Bay. And so then I stayed for that spring semester, and I worked at Pier 39, a little travel store called On the Road Again, and I would ride the BART in and would love North Beach and would walk from Union Square Station, from the BART station, and just absolutely fell in love with San Francisco. I got accepted back at Carolina, Chapel Hill. So that fall, I went back to North Carolina and started at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And so that was how I ended up at Carolina, was because of I knew getting a degree from Chapel Hill would carry more weight with an employer in San Francisco, because this is where I wanted to be. So I went back, graduated from Chapel Hill, as you mentioned, with a PR and journalism degree. And that has served me well throughout my career. When you understand how to communicate well and you understand those elements, it carries you through public speaking, whether you become a journalist, or you end up going into PR, or perhaps like me, you use that and leverage it to become an executive.
So while at North Carolina, you talked about team sports being so important, but it was a individual sport that you went and helped with on the U.S. Olympic team level, the boxing team. And what were we talking about at that time period?
It was Roy Jones, and I think it was coming out of the 88 Olympics, where there was the protest that had happened in boxing. And yeah, so it's funny. So I had applied to the USOC for an internship, and I got turned down for the one I wanted. And then lo and behold, USA Boxing said, hey, we would like for you to take this opportunity. So I did. And because you just never know where life's going to take you. And that turned out to be so serendipitous and fortunate for my career, because the person I worked for, Leslie King, ended up giving me my first referral to the University of Miami for my first job after I graduated from North Carolina. So that's how I ended up in Miami, was just through her referral to Larry Wall. Larry Wall is currently the Vice President of Communications for the Orange Bowl. He was my boss at the University of Miami back in the Dennis Erickson football era. That's how I ended up at Carolina. So it derailed my plans to come out to San Francisco. That's where I really wanted to be. But Miami was a great place.
Well, we know Coach Erickson well because of his time here with the 49ers. Of course, he was the Seahawks as well before that. But you think of 91 with the Canes and really a special 30 for 30 type time. You got Gino Toretta and then, you know, Kevin Williams, Darren Smith, some guys on defense.
But
The Rock, yeah. Dwayne Johnson. You've had several Dwaynes in your life. We'll get to that. But like that 91 team, certainly a cool time to be a part of it. I think back to the 90 Canes team, which I'll tell you about in a second. But 91, I mean, to walk in the door and to be part of this championship thing and how it sort of has informed being around other championship teams. And then while at Miami, spending some time doing some stats with the Heat to get a feel for NBA basketball. It seems like you've had different things that have tied together by being different places and wanting to get back to where that other place was.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. You know, I have a philosophy in life that, you know, you just, you there's always something good that can come from an opportunity. So I always like to try new things. Even though I was with the Heat for 23 years, I had 9 different jobs along the way. And it's sort of what brought me here, too, is I wanted to do something new and different. But to your point about, I've just been fortunate, you know, at Carolina, I got to be around Dean Smith and the team. Now, by no means, I was a student, but by no means was Dean Smith talking to me and asking me for coaching advice. But when you're around and you see how people conduct themselves and you see just sort of the behind the scenes, you learn a lot, right? Like, I love to learn. And then, very much to your point, being at UM and being around that championship caliber team and the way Dennis conducted himself, the players conducted themselves, was very different from Carolina. And then to be around the Heat and, you know, sort of working really closely with Pat Riley for my first 4 years, because I started, that's how I actually know Raymond Ritter from here, is because I started at the Heat in sports information. So I was like Brett or, you know, Raymond's right-hand folks. That was my job, and that's how I got to know Ray. So it's really a small world and always trying new things. But being incubated at a young age, I would say, in those different environments, you just learn about how to conduct yourself. And, you know, you see some moments of great stress and pressure, and you watch how the best sort of handle those and move through them. And probably the best thing that happened was when I first started with the Miami Heat, I was the ghostwriter for Pat Riley's monthly coaches column that was in our Miami Heat magazine that no longer exists. But so I would write it. So what that meant was I would call Pat, and I would give him 3 or 4 topics for him to consider, and he would go on this stream of unconscious thought about the topic, and I would then distill it down into a one page, tried distilling Pat Riley's genius into one page. But over time, and I would send it to him, and then he'd mark it up, and the first time I ever did it, there was so much red on the sheet, you thought he bled on it, right? Mm-hmm. But by the time we were said and done, I sort of had gotten how he liked things positioned and said, and I have to say that that was really insightful, because I learned so much, because he would tell me about his philosophy of life. And that was amazing. To be 28, 30, and doing that with, you know, Pat Riley was really, really impactful.
He is so cool. I mean, it's like a movie star, larger than life. I remember just, you know, as a Cub reporter covering like Mavericks Lakers games when he was the Lakers coach, I'm thinking this guy is like unbelievably larger than life. And one of our broadcasters, Jim Barnett, played with Pat and is a very close friend with him. And like, you kind of think of that whole thing that was built there. We'll talk about the Heat in a second, but in between the Heat and being at the University of Miami, you spent a couple of years in Austin at University of Texas at Austin with the Longhorns program. And, you know, spoke of Raymond Ritter, the senior vice president of communications here with the Warriors, the equivalent for the University of Texas, the oracle of Texas football, essentially Bill Little, and super influential on me. And I'm a huge Horns fan, so I was like really excited to hit you with this. But you've got that 90 Cotton Bowl. I remember the Canes just killed the Horns. I was there and still remember it to this day. I'm pretty sore about it. But you were on the women's side of the business, and an amazing woman, a great coach, a legend who, when Kevin Durant went back to open up the Durant Center at UT Austin, I saw her really quickly, Coach Conrad. She's still around the program, but your time there And what it means. I mean, we've got a great staff here. You talked about Raymond's staff of, they're not just Brett, who's one of the producers of this podcast, and Michael Ravina and Cole Lawrence, but, you know, there's an entire set of communications here where women are leading the way, Lisa and Kim and Christina and Nadine, and this time period, women's sports, it was separate from the men's sport, but this is a legendary program and a legendary coach at UT. What was that experience?
Yeah, great point. Texas was one of the very few programs in the nation that had a men's athletic department and a women's athletic department. And DeLoss Dodds was the athletic director for the men's, and Jody was the women's. And there aren't many people, I think, who could pull that off. But Jody is of the stature and knowledge and experience that she just really believed in, like, separate but equal. She was ahead of her time, for sure, and she did some amazing things. So just having, she believed in hiring the best people, and they just, she had a focus on them being females. And so I got to be around some women that really supported each other, that really, like, pulled together, and it was a really great environment to work in. The reason I left the University of Texas, though, is I was an avid beach volleyball player, and it was landlocked. So I decided I wanted to go back to Miami and get back to playing. But that's why it was only 2 years at UT. But that opportunity to be under Jody and to travel, to be with her, to be around, again, it's those opportunities to be behind the scenes, to see people like Jody and Dennis and Pat and Dean in their, you know, in their natural states. You just sort of learn and think about the differences across that, you know, North Carolina, Miami, Texas. It's just been it's been a wonderful, wonderful career.
And to work so closely with women's basketball at the collegiate level, probably when the time came in Miami to help build out the WNBA team, there was a certain sensitivity to really caring that the women that were playing in college had an opportunity to play as professionals. So the Miami Soul was another project that, when you were with the Heat and had been part of the communications department, this became part of an initiative that you helped lead, building the program that was the team in Miami that's not around any longer, and we'll talk about that, but what was that time period?
Well said. I think the WBA was a little bit ahead of its time for South Florida, because the women's basketball in the region hadn't quite been incubated like it has been now, because this was 2000. And it was, for my role was to go out, at that time the NBA, you had to prove by getting like 5,000 season ticket deposits that you had the support, and we did. And so with the great support of our CMO at the Heat, Michael McCullough, who's still there, as well as the general manager, Randy Fund, at that time, those two were my direct bosses as we were going through this effort to get enough deposits and then to build the team and have a startup. That was so much fun. I used to call myself an executive in training wheels, because I could lean on Michael and get advice on marketing, or I could lean on Randy and get advice. And this is advice from some of the best in the business. And it was just an amazing opportunity. And so we ran that for 3 years. Ruth Riley was our first draft pick, one of the most decorated women basketball players ever from college, up through the professional ranks, even in Olympics as well. What a wonderful, she and I are still very good friends. So it was just it was a great opportunity. It was a wonderful support. It was ahead of its time. I think if WNBA was to try again in South Florida, I think they would find at this time a lot more support. We just couldn't make the economics work at the time.
You know, and you think, too, about the Heat being such a progressive organization. I see a lot of similarities, truthfully, between the way that the Heat do things as a family-run operation with the Arison family and the way that, you know, Joe Lacob and Peter Guber have helped make a family environment here, and unbelievable management, just people. I mean, to be honest, the one guy that I've kind of, over time, is like, you know, nestle up to and kind of talk to here and there at All-Star Games, or Andy Ellsberg. Oh, it's just, yeah, like, super cool guy with a similar trajectory in his career as you, working in some communications and helping with other team projects and doing all kinds of things to get to the point where he has. I just think that Heat environment is really a special thing. It's sort of the East Coast Warriors in a way, and then the way they to this day play hard every game, it seems very similar to what we're doing here. Now, all of this culminates in the past couple of years with a special honor back at your alma mater. You've done so many different cool things in your career, and it was so cool to see your sister welcome you to the podium, because she was so proud of you and saying you're fearless, and, you know, you've had such a cool life, and you know around Shaq and all these like cool stories. But the Hall of Fame, the North Carolina PR Hall of Fame, that's a really, really cool honor.
Yeah, it really is. And to have my sister, as you said, give the introductory speech for me to accept the award was really, really special. Family is very important to me. I've come from a family of four, and so we all love and support each other. So that was really special. And then to have that honor from North Carolina, you know, your undergrad degree, like, there's so much toil and hard work, and I paid my way through college. And so I remember distinctly 1 week eating just beans because that's all I could afford at that time. So there's something about your undergrad where you just work so hard, but it lays a foundation for you. And so my memories from Chapel Hill are so important and so meaningful and gave me such a springboard and an opportunity that I've always felt like I've just always had a special place in my heart for Carolina. So then to be honored by them for like sort of what my career success, there's no doubt that it came from my foundation from Carolina. And so to be recognized, that was like, it's definitely one of the top days of my life, no doubt.
Love Carolina. Love the music scene there too, especially in Chapel Hill. I mean, like between Merge Records and, you know, Superchunk, and even the guy who's like actually kind of a genius with the country guitar, Rick of Southern Culture on the Skids, and the show that they put on. I mean, it's a really vibrant music scene between just the whole Research Triangle, yeah, with Chapel Hill, Raleigh, and Durham. And as we're talking about music, we do this on this show, a speed round that we like to bring out. And the last three questions for you, and we can do them quickly because you got business to take care of. We got many events coming to Chase Center and basketball games and everything. So, your favorite artist or group that you hope to see play Chase Center, or maybe who already has and you did see already?
A fantastic question. My first concert ever that I ever saw was at Carolina. It's fitting, and it was Janet Jackson, and it was her Rhythm Nation tour. And so she was our 11th show here to open the building in September. So I never get starstruck. It's just I've had fortune to be around everybody, but I was like, I have got to get a picture with Janet Jackson because her show here was to celebrate the 30th year of her Rhythm Nation album. So that was super, super special for me.
We've got so many great eateries when people, yeah, come to see games or shows, but if you had to pick one, and we heard about the dumplings, and I know that's coming to the outside, but the interior here at Chase Center, your favorite eatery?
Oh, it's Hot Dog Bill's. You have to have a hamburger that's a hot dog, and the sauce is amazing, amazing.
And finally, in general, taking a holistic view of what's been built here and still what's to come, what's currently your favorite feature of Chase Center?
It's the artwork. It really is. It brings a atmosphere and brings all the different areas to life in a way that I've never seen done before. And as Rick Welts said, he said, you know, we had to spend 1% on art, and we really leaned into it, and we really did. And the art around here is fantastic. Every day I turn the corner and there's a beautiful piece that just takes my breath away.
This has been tremendous. Thank you so much for taking the time to let us get to know you a little bit better as we build bigger and better and great things here in the months and years to come at Chase Center. And as the general manager of Chase Center, we're just thrilled to hear your story and get to know what we're doing here and why we're doing it and a bit of your background. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, it is my pleasure. And please, I want all the audience to know, please come experience Chase Center. It is great. There was a reason this was built for the community, and we hope you'll come enjoy it.
Kim, thank you for joining the Warriors podcast.
Thank you.